Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to. Joining me today is Juliana.
Hello everyone.
And today we're going to be talking about Roadside Picnic.
Yes.
By, oh no, I should have done this, Arkady and Boris Strugatsky, two Russian authors.
Yes.
And do we need to catch up with anything? Nope, nothing's happened in the world since the last podcast.
We got given a free weekend because your gig was delayed.
And I mean, I was going to mention, I was pleased to do the podcast that we talked about Starship Troopers and fascism last episode. because it might be a bit depressing to, that's honestly one of the reasons why I wanted to do that podcast.
Get it out of the way.
Get out of the way before the election, because doing it after the election might feel, there'd definitely been a different tone. Mm-hmm. Talking about that kind of stuff. Anyway, let's move on to Roadside Picnic. Let's move on from politics and stuff. Let's talk about Roadside Picnic. You read this book before, it turns out. You mentioned it, that you remember reading it.
I think so. Just before coming in, I decided to not take my phone in to record the podcast, so I can't look it up.
Okay.
But I think I have read it in the past, because I think you said in the past that we were watching a movie where it would have been good to read the book or something.
Maybe that way. Let's maybe talk about it a bit that later.
So I think I did read it.
Well, I read it and I reviewed it in 2010. Check this out.
Oh, wow.
SFBRP 88.
Okay.
Or 088, because I always put the leading zeros on there. And that would have been, what does that say here? April 10th, 2010. So we're talking 14 years ago. More than 14. 14 and a half years ago.
Yep.
I read this book then as well. And I think I listened to it as an audiobook or read it as an ebook. I haven't gone back and listened to the podcast that I did about it. Because again, I care very little for the opinions of Luke in 2010. This was after the time when I started taking photos of
each thing, so
I started taking photos of me holding the books up in front of the camera to use as the podcast art. Once I worked out that was a thing you could do. And so I started doing that in episode 72, and this was back when I was still reading things as paper books, if you know what I mean. And then 81 was the first time I'd like listened to an audiobook specifically for this podcast. I think episode 88, that would have been an ebook version of this, I'm thinking.
Yeah.
And the translation back then, I was just checking it on Wikipedia, that translation, because it was published in Russian language.
Yeah.
The translation was Antonia W. Bois. Boy? B-O-U-I-S. Don't know that. So she's a translator. She's been called the best literary translator from Russian into English.
Okay.
When I started listening to this, it's like a new version, a new translation.
Uh-huh.
And this one is translated by... let me just go over to, because it's the same one. It's the same audiobook that is now on Audible. So it's translated by Alina Bormashenko.
Okay.
And there's a few times when I've done this, when I've reread a book with a different translation.
Yes.
One of them was Solaris. You remember the original English language version was like, it was translated into English from the French translation of Russian. And then when Audible wanted a version, they were like, let's go back to the original Russian source. And that one I was actually I had the paper book and I was listening to the audiobook in parts, big chunks of it. I would read the earlier translation and then read and listen to the new translation at the same time.
But you didn't do that here.
I didn't do that here because I was just listening to the audiobook. It was just part of the, I think it was on the library app, so I could just listen to it for free.
Okay, cool.
I think so anyway. Either way, so it was an interesting experience this time, remembering some of the passages and remembering some of the writing from that first reading.
From 2010.
There is definitely some differences.
Okay. Obviously, because you start off this podcast by pointing this out. And so I started off because
my notes that I made on this.
An impression.
The notes I made on this was, audio version mentions a new translation, you know, because that's what it says at the start. A new translation by this. And there's a, like a forward by Ursula K. Le Guin, I think, mm-hmm. Which I skip over. I never listen to these forwards or whatever they are.
Makes sense.
So I just wanted to mention that. The one of the reasons why I was thinking, should I recommend this? One of the reasons I'm rereading this, because mm-hmm. these are science fiction classics.
Yes.
But just because something is a science fiction classic, does it make it onto the SFBRP must read science fiction list?
Yeah, that's the question.
And that is the question. And so that's kind of what I went into this thinking. And immediately I'm having the same issues with... that I had with The Forever War, in that there's not a single version that I can recommend which is a good version.
Yes.
And again, in this case, it's fine. Like, the both translations are fine. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with that. If this makes it onto the SFBRP must-read science fiction list or not isn't based on the translation.
Mm-hmm.
But it is, but you know, that's always a consideration. How good is the translation?
Yeah.
Like, what is the translation doing to the text? Is it updating it? You know, because the first translation was from like 1973 and this translation is from 2012.
Yeah.
So the language could have moved on a bit and stuff. But really, what changed my reading of it this time is the narration of the audiobook.
Okay.
So let me just set up the history of this book is that this is a book written in Russian by Russian people living in Soviet Russia.
Yeah.
And when? In 1971.
Okay.
And the way that... So that was in my head. And so here's the thing. I reckon the first time I read this must have been by ebook. Because as I'm reading it, I'm remembering back to 2010. So either it was narrated by someone with a neutral accent, or I was just narrating it in my head, knowing that it had been written in Russian and translated into English.
Yeah.
And so even though it says, the text of the book says that this book is set in America... I'm just like, nah, it's not set in America. It's Russian. So whatever, again, this is just something that I notice now with this reread, because it's set in a place and everything about this book, all of the characters in this book, they're not American characters from the 1970s. The locations in this book, the way he's talking about, oh, and then I went into this apartment block and did this and that. And I'm like, no, you didn't. No, because if this is in a city or in a town of the size that is written about in the text of the book, nobody in this town lives in an apartment blocks like the people here do. This is very, very, very Soviet 1971 text.
Right, okay, because in America, people would live in single-family homes?
Or whatever. Like, even if they lived in apartments, or even if they wouldn't be... Like, what they would be calling them and the way they would be talking about them and the sense of community around them isn't what it would feel like for those people to live in.
This is like very meta.
I know, so but like... this is what was in my head when I was reading. And the reason for that is the audiobook narrator, narrated by Robert Forster, is putting on a really strong American accent and like a regional... He sounds like he's from New York.
Yeah.
And the way that he's talking is so American. But then the words and the storytelling and what's happening and how he's doing stuff and how he's interacting with the police and how he's interacting with different things is not American at all. And it's such a weird like head fuck to read somebody in Russia, 1971 Russia, writing about something that's happening in America. And it's just incongruous. It's like, oh no, I mean, it's interesting to read. Like, it's like, again, reading at that meta level, you say it's kind of an interesting read, but I'm like, oh, this isn't very good fiction about 1971 America.
Yeah.
Because all of the things that, again, what I was reading about in 1970s America, these other science fiction, I was like, why is there no science fiction must read books from the 1970s?
Mm.
And again, what America was like then is very different from what a guy, two brothers writing in Soviet Russia are writing about America in 1971. It's kind of different, you know.
That's really interesting, because it makes it kind of feel like it's... I can't remember the book,
yeah,
really, to be honest.
No.
But it feels a bit like... it adds some alienness to.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It honestly feels like the people in the book are just as alien, yeah. Not just as alien. The people in the book are very alien compared to what you would expect people in America to be like that.
Yeah.
And it's not just the language. It's like a lot of the mannerisms,
yes.
You know, a lot of just the social interaction lifestyle. But it's not that he's describing, it's two authors, whoever's writing these sections. It's not like they are describing. It's not like they're describing something wrong.
Yeah.
It's that in the description.
Subtle.
No, in the descriptions, there are assumptions about how life works.
Yeah.
Which isn't how the assumptions that you would have if you were an American in 1971 compared to if you were living in Soviet Russia in 1971. Like, just the basic assumptions of, like, how the world works, which is unspoken, but obviously has to be true for the story and the interactions to make sense. So that was one thing that really, really stood out to me in this time.
Okay.
Put into massive contrast by this guy with this New York, Boston, or, like, New England, or whatever it is in that area where, like, just the way that it's doing. So it read very differently to me this time.
I know you have your notes and stuff,
no,
but
no,
I have a question.
Bump over to your side of the discussion anytime you want.
Do you know why the two brothers, the two Russian brothers in the Soviet Union, made a decision to write a book that takes place in America? Like, do you know?
It's always for those two, and they've mentioned this before and after. Oh, the other thing about this is just what I want to say is that this is from an earlier version than the published Russian version that was before it had been censored by the Soviets.
Oh, okay.
So here's the thing. The way that these science fiction authors got around censorship normally is to write science fiction, which is sort of like, oh, no, this isn't anything about our current world.
We're not criticizing anybody here.
Yeah, we're not criticizing anyone. We're not making any political statements. This book is set in space. This book is set in America. So I think it's just if they'd have based their book or set their book in the Soviet Union, there would have been more scrutiny. Like, they wouldn't have been able to publish things. I would say wouldn't. I'm guessing that the authority figures in an American set novel couldn't be good or bad or represent a different thing than they could have done if they'd have set the book in Soviet Russia.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense.
So that's, I think, the reason why they are setting it in America, because then they can do what they want with the characters. The characters don't have to be good.
Yeah.
The leadership doesn't have to be good. The police can be corrupt or whatever you need to do.
Yeah.
And they probably wouldn't have got away with that. So I guess there are some differences in this book compared to the previous translation, because, again, this is translated from a version which is how the Stragetsky brothers wanted it before the censored had got hold of it and said, change this, change that. And again, I can't remember from 14 years ago what's changed, but I'm just saying the vibe in this book is very different because the narrator is very American in this way.
Okay.
And there's, you're just by the end of the book. So the idea of this book, I haven't really got into the actual story of it. It's sort of like there's alien visitations and now there's these weird zones where inside the zone, weird shit's happening and lots of random weird shit is in there. But if you're outside the zone, you're fine. But then these stalkers, as they're called, go inside the zone, pick up the leftover alien discarded trash and technology and bring it out and sell it to people. And that's what this book is about. It's about these stalkers, they're called stalkers, who go in and pick up the remains, say, and they said the analogy to a roadside picnic is, imagine loads of kids coming in and parking their cars in a clearing in the forest, having a party and then leaving, and what's left behind, like, you know, the mice come out and the rabbits come out and go, what does this mean? And it's sort of like they don't understand. It's sort of like an empty Coke can, and, you know,
the anthropologist looking at this weird,
and the scientist experts coming out and going, what's this? It's sort of like, yeah, it's a discarded, you know, vape pen or whatever.
Yes.
Like, if you don't know what a vape pen is, you just come back and, well, I don't know what it is.
It's a magic wand.
Yes, it's magic. So all of this kind of stuff. And by the end of it, actually, the influence is spreading outside of the town and area. So they're just sort of like, oh, no emigrating. If you lived in this town, or if you were in this town when this alien visitation happened, you're just not allowed to move out. And and that's one of those things that I go, well, in America, there couldn't just be a declaration, nobody gets to move away, you all have to stay living there. And it feels like the people in the town are
Okay.
And if that was an American thing,
oh, no.
That would be...
Even in the 70s, I don't think anybody...
Or whatever. they would have to be fenced in, and then it would become dystopian in a way... I mean, this book is dystopian in some ways, but... it's kind of just sort of like, oh, we're just getting on with stuff. And they're like, we're not allowed to emigrate. And they're like, oh, I guess we're here anyway. And that almost felt like the most like Soviet Russia kind of thing where you're just like, oh, nobody's allowed to move out of here anymore. And everyone's sort of like,
yeah,
well,
yeah,
I guess.
The thought process behind that is kind of, I wasn't going anywhere anyway, so yeah. Okay, that doesn't really affect
me. That's what I'm saying.
Like,
it's just these mindset, things unspoken, that there can just be a declaration by the government, okay, nobody's allowed to move away from the city.
Yeah.
And in America, you'd be like, and there were lots of protests, and the people were doing
rights,
it, and they get
to
do this,
freedom.
And you had to put friends them, and everyone else. And it's just, none of that's mentioned. Like I say, the things that aren't said, the assumptions which aren't explicitly stated kind of give away that it's, you know, written in Soviet Russia.
Yeah, kind of lifelong quarantine is not something that would go down easy.
All of the things are like, oh no, you know, these movies where there's like, oh, there's an outbreak or something and everyone has to stay where they are, and everyone's like,
I'm not.
Yeah. The name of the wife of the main character, Redridge or whatever his name, actually let me just look on Wikipedia because I'm sure it's right here as well. Dr. Pillman, no, what is it? Oh, yeah, Redrick Red Shuhart. Again, and the names are really funny. So here's the thing. If you're talking about like an American wife in 1971 America, what would be the name of the wife? I mean, just any name. And I'm going to now say what the name is. Guta.
Trudy.
No, Guta. G-U-T-A is the name of the wife. And I'm like, I have never read an American book where the... Yeah, Guta. That's it.
That's not... Is that a name?
Yeah, her name is Guta.
It's like in German, the good one.
Guta, G-U-T-A. What I'm trying to say is it's not an American name.
It's not
all. All of the names in the book are like these kind of like just slightly off American names. You know, like Burbridge and Guta and Dr. Pillman. You know, I'm just saying like the names are fine, except Guta really stands out as not quite the name.
So it's a bit like this, the song in the, what is it, 70s from Adriano Celentano, where he's kind of making up the English sounding.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds English, but it isn't.
Pensacola, Ensaline Cusel or whatever it is. Not Pensacola, whatever it is. Whatever the thing is. Anyway, so... putting all of that aside,
it's really interesting.
All the translation-y kind of stuff, and this is a different, it's a new translation read to me by someone putting on an American accent. So, okay, now putting all of that aside, the American accent is only part of the thing that kind of got to me or really affected how I read this or listened this time listening to it. Because the first time I read it, I must have read it. I'm sure it was just something I read.
Yeah.
Didn't listen to it as an audiobook. I just read it as an ebook. So here's the thing. The decision that the audiobook narrator made, or the producer made, about like what's his name? Redrick. What Red is talking about and how he talks.
Yeah.
He suddenly, for me... not the same character as the first time I read this book.
Oh, interesting.
In the first time, he was just a guy who's getting on with stuff, and all the conversations that he's having with people are sort of like, it's a conversation, and I could put my own emotions onto what's being said.
Yeah.
Because it's sort of like, he said this, he said that, and he said this. And in my head, I'm like, oh, this is someone who's like pragmatic, doing the best he can, getting through some stuff, because he's like, it's really dangerous to go into the zone.
Mm-hmm.
He does it anyway. But then in this book, it's sort of like he's like this, he's just so weary and cynical. And
Because the way he speaks.
Just because the tone of voice of the narrator.
Yeah.
The narrator makes it into someone's like, oh, I've got to do this. Oh, now they're talking about. Oh. And it was so weird for me because I was like, oh, I thought this guy was like driven and interested and doing the best he could. And then in this book, I'm like, he's resigned and cynical. And that's not in the text. Oh, it didn't feel like that was in the text of the book.
Okay.
It's like, I don't know. It's just such a strange thing that the whole time I was reading this, I was like, is it in the text of the book that he has this attitude? Or is it just the narrator putting on like a, you know, like a, making him sound like a, what do you call it? Like the, in the noir books, like the private detective, like, I guess I've got to go and do it.
Cynical.
What it is. But like kind of a cynicism there, which the thing is, the main character in this book, in the text of the book, is kind of unlikable.
Yeah.
So someone who's unlikable, but like just doing the best they can and just getting through it is different from someone who's unlikable and then cynical.
Yes.
So I kind of resented spending time with this person, not just because they're not a good person and not a kind, I mean they are a kind, but whatever's going on here, obviously not a good person,
kind of makes me want to read this again, like just to read it.
Yeah, or maybe there's a way.
Maybe the new translation.
If I read the new translation, I think I would have liked it better than this audiobook narration.
Okay.
So what's my main here? Oh yeah, main character very unlikable. With this narrator even more so, because it's read with a cynical voice rather than... there's a difference between world weary. This is my notes here. Mm. A world weary voice and a cynical voice. And there's a distinct difference.
Definitely.
Someone who is just like, ah, oh, fuck, here we go again. I've just got to do it. And sort of like, oh, here we go again. Oh, we got to, you know, there's just this acting. There's an actingness, which is like, it's like difficult to disengage from the acting.
Yes, I understand.
And so I had to continuously like hear a word and then like re-perform it in my own head, which is what I do when I read the text, and also what I do when I listen to audiobooks with someone who isn't putting on too much acting.
Yeah.
Like I can then redo it. And I had this issue, as just mentioned it before, with this when I reread or listened to part of the start of Ender's Game.
Yeah.
Where I was just like checking out what the start of that book was, you know, with this free audiobook from the library. So I checked it out.
Yeah, I remember you mentioned that
before with these two generals, or the, you know, the battle school leader and a general, they're talking to each other, and I always thought like, oh, that's a tragic situation that they're getting through and trying the best they can. And then by one of the guys sniggering, I'm like, oh, these are like cruel people who are like punishing, like enjoying the punishment of children. And I was like, I never read it that way. But again, in the book there is just the text of the conversation. There isn't even any attribution. You just kind of work out, oh, this person's saying that, this person's saying that. And in the Ender's Game audiobook, they just were like, oh, we'll get two different narrators to do it. So another one, just started listening to an audiobook of a small book, kind of an insignificant book called Dune by Brian Herbert.
Okay.
And Brian Herbert? Wait, have I got the wrong Herbert? Whichever Herbert
is. That's the wrong Herbert.
I suddenly could have said whatever his son's called. Either way, because I was thinking we're going to watch the second Dune movie. Probably
Frank Herbert.
Frank Herbert, that's it. Brian Herbert's his son.
That's
why I was suddenly like, oh no,
I needed to really, as soon
as I said it, I was like, oh no,
that's
name
wrong.
Sounds wrong. Frank Herbert. Anyway, so I started like, oh, I'll listen to this audiobook again, and then later on when we do, like, we'll rewatch the first movie, watch the second movie.
Yep.
And it's out, you know, we'll do that in the next few months or something.
Yes.
So I thought, well, I'll listen to the audiobook again to, like, you know, to have it all fresh in my head. And there, all of every single different character in the book has got a different actor doing the narration just for their words.
Yes.
And you know what? It's actually really good. I don't like audio play versions of things and adaptations, but this is actually the text of the book, but without all the attribution, but just with the reading.
Person appearing.
And it's actually really good, because again, I think Dune is something that the characters are established enough already in my head, and I've read the book enough times before that I can just go with it. And the main audiobook narrator is Simon Vance, who I've listened to lots of times and was an audiobook narrator.
Yeah.
And he's very good.
It can work. Yeah.
In this case, it's a straight reading by one guy who, unfortunately,
In Roadside Picnic,
he infects the whole thing. So, yes. So that's it. So the book itself, the actual story itself, is good.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got no problem with it. In fact, this time, I thought some of it felt more subtle in this translation. Or maybe it's just because I've read the book before and know what's happening.
Yeah.
And then in other kinds of things, it's like some other parts were like a bit more obvious.
Yeah.
Like beforehand, I was like, why is this person talking about how good looking his friend's daughter is? And I was like, I don't understand. And then later on, it's sort of like, and then it kind of mentions that he's cheated on his wife and had sex with her in times. And I was like, the first time reading it, I was like, didn't quite pick up on that. And then it was only until I got to the very end of the book where I was like, did that make, like, am I reading into this? Like, did it make more sense? Like, but then I didn't think about it. And this time through, I'm like, oh, this makes just a lot more sense. Again, because I've read the book before.
Yeah.
But yeah, some of the characters.
Yeah, you just get different subtle hints and things that you're more open.
So what happens? Oh, so the vulture is called the vulture because they, again, I don't want to give it away.
Yeah.
But if you're thinking like, what's going on here? Why do the kids not look right? You know, why is this daughter too beautiful? You know, all that kind of stuff. There's a reason for it. Maybe, yeah. I'm not going to mention it on the podcast. Maybe I'll mention it to you if you're interested before you reread it again, so you pick up on that stuff a bit easier.
Okay.
So yes, I thought it was good. I like the subtlety of it.
Okay.
I like how interesting it is and how it mentions here on the Wikipedia page, it's philosophical science fiction. I'm not really sure what that's meant to mean, but I think it's going for some non-obvious stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this time I liked some of the non-obvious stuff a bit more. But right. Again, I think that comes from a second reading.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, there's many books where you read it a second time and you get more out of it. You're like, oh yeah, because I knew what it was aiming
for. You
could
not concentrate on the big things.
Yes.
Because you can then let your gaze go hover around things or to the side. Like in a movie, you have the time to look to the right and left. And this is kind of what happens when you consume something the second time. Yeah,
I really like the ending of this.
Okay,
for me, it's like a classic ending.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if other people find it satisfying, but I really enjoy it.
Okay.
And then immediately it finishes, and suddenly it's sort of like, and afterwards by Boris Strugatsky or whoever it is. Let me have a look. Does it even say here? No, it doesn't say on this version. Either way, there's an afterwards by it. And immediately he's sort of like, hey, we started writing it here. And then I was like, oh, just let me relax a bit. Like, just let me, like, so I paused
it
a bit.
Because it follows quite like...
And I listened to a bit more and I was like, he's talking about like, oh, we use the word stalker here. And that's when we first, because we weren't quite sure what to use for someone who goes into a alien zone. And what do we, like, why? And then we're like, oh yeah, we settled. Don't know who mentioned it first, but we settled on the word stalker. And I was like, why are these guys caring so much about the word stalker? So I just stopped listening and I'm not that interested.
No, but in Russia, it's probably a word that...
Well, here's the thing.
Yeah.
They introduced the word stalker into Russian and now it's a common Russian word. So like, it's like someone just like inventing a word, you know, like a science fiction, like metaverse or whatever it is. Like someone just comes up with that. Yeah, and now the Wikipedia says that the use of stalker is... I don't know, cultural influence. It said it somewhere here that the word stalker is just become synonymous with people who do like urban exploration and people who sneak into places that are not allowed to, or lead groups into places where it doesn't go.
The English word stalker has been taken
co-opted. Yeah, the English, and this is what I didn't understand. That's what I now understand.
Russian.
Yes.
And then it feels like stalker.
Yeah.
Has then a subtly different meaning in Russian than it will have in English.
So let me say here, I'll just read a Wikipedia page, because that's what it always happens in these SFBRP episodes.
Yes.
The term stalker has became part of the Russian language and, according to the authors, became their most popular of their neologisms. In other words, they obviously introduce other words as well.
Yeah.
In the book, stalkers are people who trespass into a forbidden area known as the zone and steal its valuable extraterrestrial artifacts, which they later sell. In Russian, and after Tarkovsky's film, the term acquired the meaning of a guide who navigates forbidden or uncharted territories. Later on, urban explorers, and fans of industrial tourism, especially those visiting abandoned sites and ghost towns, were also called stalkers.
Mm-hmm.
So the video game, I mean, there's a movie, Stalker. They didn't call the movie Roadside Picnic. They call it Stalker. And then there's video games called Stalker. And I think just recently, like last month, Stalker 2 came out.
Oh,
and I saw some reviews of the next Stalker. It's called Stalker.
The video game.
Yeah. Stalker Shadow of Chernobyl. So it's talking about going in and
that is the literally the first thing that comes to my mind for these kind of areas.
So
yeah.
What I find interesting now, having read this here, is that the influence of this book of like a zone where everything's gone crazy and then you go in is like now foundational to computer gaming in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you think about all these zones, like when I play PUBG, PlayerUnknown's battlegrounds. Mm. What is the battleground? It's like the first one is Erangel, which is like this Soviet wasteland or battleground where there's already been war, which, and it's completely cleared out and there's this shrinking zone. Like, we're always talking about what's the zone, and you go outside the zone and you have the blue chips and things in your head go down. So, and this is like kind of one of the foundations. I mean, it's kind of a foundational setting now.
Yeah.
Escape from Tarkov, PUBG, all of these now are pretty much based
even
on
like
this.
Portal?
What's that?
Portal?
Portal's different. Yeah, Portal's different.
Oh, okay.
Though. I mean,
it feels like an abandoned place. And,
yeah, but that's,
you know,
that's got a very specific history and backstory, okay. And okay. It's in the future. And it, so not Portal, but Escape from Tarkov is Stalker.
Yes.
You know, the video game Stalker is Stalker. Mm-hmm. Metro 2033 or whatever it is Stalker. It is Roadside Picnic.
Yeah.
So all of those kind of things. So it is one of those things that the lineage of these things could be seen to go back, these like abandoned, not all computer games. I'm just saying specifically PUBG is sort of like, oh, what are they doing here? Erangel is... You know,
it's its own category.
I wouldn't say it's a category. I'm just saying it's a trope that can be used.
So if you... Okay, I have this question in my head for the since the beginning of this podcast.
Yeah.
If this, and I'm not saying it is, but if this would go on the SFBRP must read list, in what subheading, or would you give it a new subheading, or would it fit into one of the existing subheadings?
I think this is the proto example of a new kind or a different style of science fiction.
Yes.
Let's talk about the Rosewater trilogy.
Yeah.
That is alien visitation. Now there's a zone where weird shit happens.
Yes.
And some people go into it and some people come out of it. And if they come out of it, they're changed. This person has got wings and is an angel. And this person, whatever, all the Rosewater stuff comes as well.
Yeah.
We could be talking the Southern Reach trilogy by Jeff Vandermeer, Annihilation, the movie Annihilation.
That was
as well.
It. That's the movie that...
So that is very clearly a zone. Mm. And in the books, it's sort of like, weird shit happens. Like you could say that the group of, was it six women? Women or whoever it is who go into the zone, in the book, and also in, I guess in the movie, they are stalkers. Like that is it.
Right.
It is a roadside picnic kind of thing.
Yes.
So if this was just to go into the SFBRP must reads list, the only thing I could put it in with is like with Solaris and Aliens or Alien.
Yet.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I think it could be like if also Rosewater trilogy and Annihilation, like the Southern Reach trilogy, were put in here.
Yeah,
I think it would be in its own thing, which would be like zones,
and stalkers.
I just call it stalkers. You know, because it's about, you know,
it fits.
Stalkers go into the zone.
Yeah,
or whatever the thing would be called. Here's the thing: I don't think it gets onto the SFBRP must reads list.
Okay,
and the only reason is because what it is doing as a book now is pretty much is what Solaris is doing in what this book is about, which is aliens are too difficult to understand, but is there a way for them to, even if we don't understand them, do they understand us, and can they help us, or what, like, even without them noticing that they're so alien to us, but we're so obvious to them.
Primitive.
We're so primitive to them that they can just be like, oh, good puppy, and squeeze us a belly rub, and for us it's life-changing, and for them it's nothing, literally nothing. And that's what it feels like this book and Solaris, this book Solaris, is they're both doing that kind of thing.
Okay.
And so, again, it's one of those weird things that it's a good book. I enjoyed it. It's going to get...
It's not in the same way influential as Starship Troopers, which...
Starship Troopers?
Starship.
No, because I think Starship Troopers, the body of work which that is foundational for is like almost all military science fiction.
Okay.
If you know what I mean.
And to me, it feels like Roadside Picnic is kind of like
is,
that
is
for
foundational
weird,
for
a, the like
yes,
weird.
Yes, and that's the thing. And
stuff.
If I read more weird science fiction, like Annihilation and the Southern Reach trilogy.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about that. We didn't even talk about that. If that goes on the list now, I don't remember that.
No, I don't think it does, because I don't think. I mean, it could do. I'd have to reread it.
It feels very much like this is like its own category. It's an important own category.
It's important, but again, I didn't enjoy this book. It's not a, for me in this case, it's not a, maybe it's a 4-star book, but it's only like maybe. And I was kind of like fighting against it with this audiobook narration.
Yeah.
And
well, that's a pity.
And
but,
so
yeah.
It, not every 4-star book gets on the SFBRP must read list.
Okay.
5-star books, yeah, I'll probably find a way to get it on there. But 4-star books, it can be good. But what this is foundational of is a subgenre of the books that I've read is like 6-7 books.
Yeah.
And 7 books and 6 of them are within 2 trilogies. You know
Jesus,
what I mean? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, this book is foundational to the Jeff Vandermeer Annihilation.
Yeah.
And probably to the Rosewater trilogy by, is it Tade Thompson?
Yeah.
But beyond there, I don't really see what this is foundational to in the same four and two in the same way that War of the Worlds, Starship Troopers, and you know the robot, you know the robot mystery, you know the Asimov stuff.
Yes.
Sort of like when you actually talk about these different kind of things. Maybe I should have brought up the must reads list. I guess I can just click on it here. It's right here.
Yeah.
If you actually look at some of these books, this is Solaris from 1961. It feels like it is in the shadow of Solaris rather than it casting its own shadow.
I think I have another book that goes into the category. Do you remember the Under the Skin thing book?
Yeah.
Is it called Under the Skin?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I think that is also part of this category. I think there's
in a way that feels more Solaris and aliens are weird, but they're on Earth.
Yeah,
kind
yeah,
of
yeah,
thing.
Exactly. So I think this is now, I think now, and then this is now, of course, very obvious always, this is now we're coming to territory of this SFBRP must read list always will reflect your taste in a level
yeah,
that...
That's why it's got SFBRP
yeah,
at
yeah,
the start
yeah, yeah.
of it.
I understand. However, I want to kind of make a point for these kind of books because I think they...
Okay, does it get onto the list then?
Well, I would have to reread it.
Okay, here's the thing. Let's leave it up to you.
Okay.
You reread Roadside Picnic in the new translation or whatever you get. Just get the ebook version.
Yeah.
Reread it.
Yeah.
And you make the decision.
And we're going to go back to this.
But it can't just be on there because it's foundational. And it can't just be on there because it's old, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I get it.
It would be good to get a book from the whole decade of the 1970s on there. But I could talk my way. Look, it's right here as well, if you know what I mean. Like was it at the end here? Yeah. Roadside Picnic. It broke my brain, but I can't remember it if I should recommend it or not. And I would mostly recommend this book, but it is dated in a way which is like weird. It's like differently dated than the other books from the 1970s, which there was like cultural stuff going on there, which is like it, which infuses the books from American 1970s authors.
Okay, I have another idea.
Yeah,
maybe the SFBRP must reads list needs an annex. An annex, like, you know,
like a little side,
like a little side section where there are books that we wouldn't say you have like really you must read like to understand the genre and all this kind of stuff, but to grasp like the whole picture of.
Here's the thing: should we do this? Let's do it this way.
Mm-hmm.
You asked me before: does the Rosewater trilogy make it onto the must reads
list? I did, yeah.
We did that in the episode. Was it episode 550?
Yeah,
and I said maybe. But like if it was instead of it being 50 books long or 52 books long, if it was 60 books long, that would maybe make it on there.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't make it on there before Roadside Picnic.
Yes.
And the same with the Southern Reach trilogy, which I thought was really good, especially the first book.
Yes.
Annihilation.
Yeah.
Would Annihilation make it on there? Yes, it would, but not before Roadside Picnic.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying
there? Yeah.
Like, if you want to do this sort of like, there's this dystopia, what year is this? Mm-hmm. Sci-fi POV versus fantasy POV, board game diplomacy. If Stalkers in the Zone is his own thing.
Yeah.
Yes, it could make it on. This would be the book of
the
Annihilation, Rosewater, or Roadside Picnic. Roadside Picnic would make it on there, but those other ones, I'd have to reread them to see.
Yeah.
And I think I've already read Annihilation twice. So who knows?
Okay.
I don't know. Maybe I'll reread Rosewater and Annihilation again. I've got quite a long to read list at the moment because I'm really enjoying this, going back and reading some classics.
Yeah.
Or what I think of as classics. So here's the thing. Let's put it under advisement. It's right here. Look, we reviewed most of these books recently enough or read them enough times to be sure of their place on the SFBIP must reads list. However, we plan on rereading various other novels to see if they should be added to the list in the future. Mm-hmm. These include Finity's End by C.J. Cherry, David Zendel Neverness. I mean, these are not in orders of importance, but here you go. Arkady and Boris Skrzydlewski, Roadside Picnic, Frederick Pohl, Gateway. Again, need to check 1970s book for the enjoyment-destroying dated content. Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, is it less funny the more you read it? Under the Skin by Michael Faber. How much of the impact was from the book versus the movie? Same with 2001 A Space Odyssey, movie versus book. Yep. Same with The Hunger Games, movie versus book. And then Becky Chambers' Long Way to a Small Angry Planet. Will this still be relevant more than 10 years later? In other words, we need to revisit that to see if it makes it onto the list as a kind of like as a genre defining or whatever defining list. And I think it's for that book, it's still a bit too early.
Too early, yeah.
Even though it's 10 years old. It's like 2014 or something. Mm. So, but here's the thing. Some of these other books are newer than that or older than that and do make it or don't make it for other reasons. And then, down at the bottom, books under consideration that we've reread since compiling the list to see if they should be added or removed. Johan de Mon, The Forever War. Not this one. It's very dated, but even worse, there isn't a definitive version to recommend. Listen to our review here. So that's what I would say. You reread Roadside Picnic.
Yes.
And then in a future episode, we won't review it all again, but we'll just mention on another podcast where we're discussing the SFBIP must reads list, if it makes it on or not.
That's good.
And it could be book number 53 to make it onto the list.
Yeah, let's do it this way.
All right, then.
So do you change your rating for the book?
Well, I don't remember what I rated it last time. Should we have a quick look here? What is it? Episode lists here. So Roadside Picnic, 4 stars. Is how much I rated it, is how highly I rated it in 2010. That's one of the reasons why I was considering it for the SFBIP must read list. No, I think it's still a 4-star book.
Okay.
Because again, what it's doing is really good. And the audiobook narration didn't put me off. And the quirkiness of it, how it's totally not an American, but even though it's set in American, it might as well be set in Soviet Russians' version of America in 1971. Right. Yeah. But that's all at that meta level and reading level. But I think the text of the book, again, you're spending time with someone who's quite unpleasant and it's not a good time always spending time with rhetoric.
Right.
And the Vulture and the other guys and Dr. Pillman. But I think there's enough going on here. And again, it's philosophical and it's subtle, but it's good. 4 stars.
And in comparison to the American books, the datedness, is there any sort of like where you think, oh, this is like really weird kind of views that people
I talked about all at the start. Imagine the datedness of someone writing in 1971 Soviet Russia. Projecting American 1971 America onto it. Like I say, it's weird. It's not dated because it isn't.
There's no datedness.
The location and time that it is based in doesn't exist.
And never did. Yeah.
It's like this alternate world where America is like conforms to the thought process of a Soviet Russian writer. Again, which is difficult to say, but like I say, it's foundational. I think it's more foundational to movies and games than it is to other science fiction writing, but that happens quite often.
Interesting.
Something will break out of the science fiction like world of like writing of novels and short stories, and those tropes will become bigger outside of that. I think even like, you know, there's things like, this is like the Stephen King book Under the Dome or something. Again, I haven't read these. And I think the Simpsons movie where they put Springfield under a dome as well, you know. So these kind of like cities cordoned off or these zones cordoned off. And then in real life, Chernobyl happened and you're like, oh, this is like Stalker. And that's why when the movie comes out, there's no way to talk about Chernobyl without kind of reference. There's no way to now talk about Roadside Picnic without invoking Chernobyl, the Chernobyl area zone, whatever it's called, Pripyat or whatever the town is there.
Yeah. There's like certain images I have in my head, like with, you know, with the playground and then like the weird bus stops. And it's like, it just looks so
weird. And so that's the thing. In the book, when they go into the zone, when Red and the Vulture and these other guys go into the zone, what the images in my mind are purely Soviet Russia, or in this case Ukraine, or whatever it is, you know, sort of like the tower blocks and the garages and the parks and stuff, you know.
Yeah,
it's all Eastern Bloc. Like we live in East Germany technically, former East Germany, and even in the town that we live in, you know, when he's talking about going into the garages, all I have are those you know, those garage blocks next to the Plattenbau.
They are there.
And it feels like that's the right image, because in America, I don't know if there are these garages as they're talking about here.
Like
because,
separated from houses.
Yeah, because everyone lives in these apartment blocks. Yes. And then there's garages where people keep stuff, which they can, you know, they can park the car, but also put other stuff, you know, in there. And for me, I'm sure they do exist in America, but that's not a common enough thing that you can just say, oh, they went past the garages.
Yeah.
And like if people know what you're talking about.
If you have certain images of American small towns,
yeah,
there will be a certain image that you will have, and that is house with a garage.
That's not the image that I had in my head reading this.
Of course not.
Anyway, that's it. That's all I want to say.
Okay, cool.
Oh, but one reason I did do this is because we actually went over to Eisenhüttenstadt, which is an East German planned communist community based around a steel mill.
Yeah.
And they rebuilt a whole town. And we drove through that and we were like, oh, and in my head, I'm like, Stalker. what I'm talking about, like, not Stalker, but you know what I mean? Like, this is, I'm in Roadside Picnic. This is Stalker territory.
Yeah. It was quite interesting going through there because you could see that the American thought process of like the separation of living and working and leisure time.
Well, it's
time
not American. It's like the Corbusier, modern
Bauhaus.
Yeah, Bauhaus.
Where did that come from?
They're like, oh, well, they fucked this all up.
They did the same similar thing. In the US, it's a little bit, they did it in a different way.
Well, the zoning is different.
Yeah, the zoning is different. And they got particularly more car-centric in the way that they did it. In Eisenhüttenstadt, you can still see the separation. Like there's the work, and then you have, this is where people live, this is then where people shop, this is where people have fun, but it makes it equally dead and
everywhere is desperate and sad
because separating these things doesn't work for humans are not built this way, and so this is why then that image of this kind of living and this
where the
up.
Zone is is the inside of the zone is as alien to America as it is alien because there's an alien visitation there.
Yeah.
Is kind of what I was thinking about this.
Yeah.
So just looking through some other people on
the reviews of other people.
4.14 stars overall on Goodreads.
Yeah.
Pretty good. And then Goodreads used to show you the average rating of people who are friends and followers of yours. But it doesn't do that anymore. So I'm going to go through. Boovin rated it 5 stars. Lamora, 5 stars. Yeah, Jim, Paul, Ryan. Don't know which Ryan, but probably Ryan. Mikael, Carlex. And then who's this? Mikael is 4 stars. But yes, Jenny, Reading Envy, 4 stars. Yeah, lots of.
So you fit in quite well in the mostly, 5 and 4 stars.
Here's the thing. I think if you get to the end of this book, you're probably giving it 4 stars.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't get to the end of this book, I totally understand that you give it 1 or 2 stars because it isn't a good book for people who aren't up for reading 1971 Soviet science fiction.
Weird
you know
stuff.
What I mean?
Yeah.
Like you've got to be into, you've got to be up for the challenge, or you've got to be up for what you're doing. Like here, Captain America, he's got the Captain America shield. Just 3 stars, 1-word review. Weird. Great.
Yeah,
that's really
it.
Good.
Perfect. Yeah, that gets it.
Yeah. Paul Forbes gave it 2 stars. I thought it would be better. Maybe something was lost in the translation from the original Russian? Like, yeah, I think maybe. Mm-hmm. I think you've got to do this. Interesting idea, poorly executed. I think there's some subtlety in this, which is, if, like I say, you get to the end and you understand the subtlety, it's a better book than if you just read it all for face value and then you're just like, what was going on? Mm-hmm. And then you just put it down and go, 2 stars. Mm. Yeah, interesting idea. The premise, which sadly never goes anywhere. Thing is, does go somewhere, but where it goes is in the background.
Yeah,
it's I think it's a little bit more subtle then some people, I'm not talking down at Lawrence or Alan or Paul here for giving it 2 stars. Because if you just don't get it, yeah. or even if you do get it, you'd be like, oh yeah, I guess, whatever. Anyway, I will, let's wrap it up there then.
Yeah, I will read it and yep. we will get back to it.
Decision. Thing is, the more I've talked about it, the more I want to put it on the list. But in my notes, I said, probably not. But again, it's sort of
sometimes
like...
Sometimes it's a conversation with me to decide these
okay,
things.
Okay, so this is my notes when I just finished the book. Should it make it onto the must-read list? Not sure. I'm not sure what it has to add, or what more it has to add over Solaris, but it would probably make a good pairing with Rosewater or Annihilation, open bracket, Southern Reach Trilogy, close bracket. That's what I wrote when yep. I finished this book, and yep. that note's been sitting there since, I don't know, September. Yep. No, it wasn't. Yeah, well, yeah, like probably a month ago when I actually finished this book, because it's taken us a while to get to this.
Yeah.
Right. Follow us on Instagram. You can do that. Follow us on
Goodreads.
Mastodon. Ah, yeah. Become our friends on Goodreads. And also head over to the SFBRP listener group on Goodreads. And then you can recommend other books. And there's even a thread there called the SFBRP. Oh, I think it's called the Must Reads List.
Yeah.
Must Read Science Fiction List, which was the thread that inspired us to make this in the first place. And also you can put some general discussion there as well.
Yep.
And any books that you think should be on this, which isn't on the list. So just check it out. And also go to sfbrp.com and you can see the list of every episode we've ever done. 554 of them so far.
Wow.
Plus the bonuses.
Impressive.
Or whatever. And also the must reads list is right there. If you go to, well, just click on the link at the top of the page. That's it from us. Thanks a lot for listening and we'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.